Hi everyone, I'm Cheryl McNeil Fisher. Dr. Kathy King and I want you to know you are important to us. We are thrilled that you're here with us today for another episode of Writing Works Wonders.
Welcome to Writing Works Wonders. We're so pleased you're with us for this exciting episode, episode 122 of Writing Works Wonders. It's an interview with the author, Jim Hartzell, and we're so excited to have him with us today. So buckle up, Buttercup, and get ready for another episode full of inspiration, laughter, and excitement for Bibliophiles at Writing Works Wonders. I'm Dr. Kathy King, and I'm so pleased to introduce you to my fabulous co-host, Cheryl McNeil Fisher.
Hey, Kathy. Hi, everybody. I'm so glad to be here. And I got a fabulous co-host, too, who's also my friend. And I call her the master of the universe. You want to know why? You'll have to check it out in our web design for authors, because she'll even let you become the master of the universe. We are thrilled to have Jim Hartzell here with us today, who has deep roots in East Tennessee. He and his sister still own a home that goes back 5 generations. He lives with his wife and 2 rescue dogs up on House Mountain. He has quite a background, and we're going to hear all about that and his books today. So now I'll turn it over to Kathy.
Thanks, Cheryl. That was terrific. Jim, welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
And Jim and I met each other at a holiday craft show here in the Knoxville area a couple of months ago, and he had a display of his books, and I found it very interesting because Jim writes for both adults and children, and that I think is a little unusual. Not always do people write to both audiences. Can you tell us a bit about how that came about, Jim?
I write children's books primarily because I have grandchildren. I have 6 grandchildren, and I have 6 children's books. And that's not a coincidence. There may be some more children's books in the future, but I'm uncertain about that. I didn't start out to write Southern fiction. I didn't start out to write in any particular genre at all. Like the intro said, I used my experience as an educator to create a character, and it sort of took off from there. I have tried other genres, and some of them were laughably awful. I mean, throwaway stuff. So it's sort of by a process of elimination got me down to the 2 genres that I write in currently.
Excellent. And what's the main focus of the non-children's series?
I spent my career in education working mostly in treatment centers and residential facilities with teenagers. They're the labeled children, the conduct disorder, emotionally disturbed, and sexual predators, alcoholics. Those were the children I worked with. And in working with these children, I started to realize that these children who are pretty much discarded by society have lives that are rich and varied and complex, and their story is worth telling as well. And so I started to write the Boone series. Actually, it wasn't going to be a series. It was going to be a standalone novel. And it's the story of a 16-year-old in somewhere in Appalachia, I don't specify the place, who starts life with a couple of strikes against him. He's one of those children out on the fringes. And I wrote the book in first-person present tense. So Boone is in the reader's head for the majority of the book. And when I finished pushing back, Boone wouldn't shut up. He wouldn't stop talking. So I just kept following him around and writing down what he said and did and thought. And it's interesting that the focus changed as I moved through the series. I think that speaks to a lot of writing. It ends up with more themes than the author originally intended. It was going to be a voice for the marginalized teenagers. And then it sort of turned into a coming of age in Appalachia story. I capped the series at six because by the end of Finding Home, the sixth book in the series, Boone more or less has it together. I mean, he's still got some stuff to work on. He's not done yet, but it felt like a good stopping place. And when I looked back over the series, I realized that one of the main themes that runs through the entire series is prejudice. And it's not the case that Boone started out as an aware young man who knows prejudice is wrong and wants to, you know, take up arms against it, that sort of thing. In the beginning, he's just this kid who most people look down on him. And so his father taught him to look down on other people. It was sort of a fact of life. And as he grew and matured and his circle of acquaintances and experiences expanded, he became more and more aware of the different kinds of prejudice that are sort of existing in our society. In addition to class and economic prejudice, which he ran into, there's gender prejudice, there's racial prejudice. One of his mentors in the series is a Black man, and he got to sort of see how Mark was treated. There's also disability prejudice, which ends up in the book as well. It's the story of a young man who becomes aware of this part of our society and has to make decisions about whether to take a stand and what kind of stand to take. The series has several focus areas, one of which is coming of age in Appalachia. And the other one, which was unexpected to me, was this theme of prejudice and what do you do about it?
Wow, that's deep. That's a tremendous explanation of the writing process and how our stories develop over time. They kind of grow from within us. Thank you for sharing that
Correct.
With us. Now, the great news for our audience is that although Jim's books are not available in audio format right now, you can find the first book of the Boone series as a podcast online. Jim, can you tell us how to find that?
The reading of Pushing Back, the first book in the Boone series, is pretty clearly the work of an amateur. So fair warning about that. I'm not a professional voiceover speaker. So you need to know that going in. There's also my reading of a novella. The name of the novella is Journey. And that one is not for the faint of heart. If you are the kind of person who is offended by realistic language, you should probably stay away from that one. But both of those are on Podbean, and that is available at housemountainviews.podbean.com. Should I spell that?
Well, that's your website, right? Do you have a link to it on your website?
I do not have a link currently on my website, but you take my website and add the word Podbean, Podbean.
Okay. And say the name of your website again.
The website is housemountainviews.com. That's HOUSEMOUNTAINVIEWS. No spaces, no capital letters, and that's .com. And to get to the podcast, it's housemountainviews.podbean, podbean.com.
Excellent. And that's because you're independently published, correct?
Correct.
And that's the name of your publishing group?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
I live on House Mountain, so it sort of made sense.
Absolutely. We learned a lot about you just with that name. Another question is for your younger series that I understand, I believe it has illustrations in it. What do you hope that the younger readers will get from this story?
There are six books in that that sort of collection. And it's not a series. Each of them stands alone. They're written for very young children and their grown-ups to read together, or for beginning readers. They're only about 900 words. There's a minimal amount of text, a lot of pictures, and each one has a theme. And I try not to, hit people over the head with a sledgehammer about the theme, but each story explores a different theme. For instance, Father and Sister Radish and the Rose-Colored Glasses is about friendship. It's about chickens, but it's also about friendship. The Box of Toys is about generosity, and Way Up in a Tree is about gratitude, and The Noise in the Woods is about imagination. Each of them has a theme, and my hope was when I wrote the series, my hope was that it would help start conversations between children and their grown-ups about some of these issues. And I should say also that I have recorded some of those as well, and those are on YouTube, and it's at House Mountain Views 9898.
All right.
Those are available in that area. And there's also a visual trailer for the Boone series, but that's that one was professionally done. It's a lot slicker.
Excellent. Thank you very much for that. A lot of good resources for us. We appreciate that. Cheryl, over to you.
Did you start writing when you were still working?
Well, a few years before she passed away, my mother surprised me at Christmas with a present. It was the first book I ever wrote. I was probably around six. It was called Jimmy Hartzell's Book of Sports, and the first page had the word football, and the second page had a really bad drawing of a football field, and the third page had the word baseball, and the fourth page had a really bad drawing of a baseball diamond, and so on and so on. Technically speaking, I guess you could say I've been writing since I was six. I started writing seriously in the early 2000s, and that's when I was still working. I wrote a nonfiction book for educators who were working with children who were challenged with difficult behaviors. That was a real a specialty kind of book. That got me started, and then it sort of grew from there. I've been writing seriously since the mid-2000s.
Your writing has grown in different ways, and as an independent author, is there certain things that you would have done differently, or something that you're doing now that maybe is working better, or do you publish only on Amazon, or do you have your books in many different places?
I really like being an independent publisher for a couple of reasons. And I use Amazon, the Kindle Direct Publishing, for my children's books and for the ebooks. And I use Ingram Spark for the Boone series. Those are both distributors, and they both have their advantages and disadvantages. But a commonality among them, and I sort of had to learn this as I went along, it's much easier now than it was at the beginning. For the listeners who are considering this kind of thing, independent publishing is really a two-edged sword. On the one hand, I have an amount of control that I would not have otherwise. I've always thought that a lot of books have print that is much too small, too jammed up. So I could say, yeah, I want it a little bigger, and I want to spread it out a little bit. I could decide what the cover looked like. I could decide the font within limits. I can decide the price. I have a lot of power there, and that's the big advantage of independent publishing. The disadvantage is I could write the worst, most typo-ridden, scatterbrained, pointless book that has ever been published, and if it would fit on the page, they would publish it because it's not their job to clean it up or edit it or anything like that. That belongs to me. There's a lot of power and a lot of responsibility, and I like that. I don't mind that at all. I appreciate the independence of it. There's For an introvert like me, marketing is a challenge, and I'm still wrestling with that.
And it's a learned art. How did you find the illustrators for your children's book?
I found a website, thumbtack.com, that is a clearinghouse for all kinds of different professionals, landscapers and house painters and, and illustrators. So I filled out the form and said, it's a children's book. This is about how many illustrations I want. This is how much I want to pay, so on and so on. Sent it off, and this is, the miracle of the internet. No exaggeration, 5 minutes later, I got an email, a guy named named David, who said, "I'm a professional graphic designer, and I'm not interested in this, but my daughter might be." Turned out she lives, 10 minutes away. We can collaborate in person and over the internet. And I want to say something about Alex. When we first began working together, Father and Sister Radish was the first children's book that we did together. I sort of had an idea of what I wanted the book to look like. I had something in my head. Her ideas were better. Every page was better than my idea. So I thought, Jim, just step back and let the lady work. And I am a huge fan of collaboration because of that. If you can find somebody that knows what they're doing, then letting them do what they do best. I can tell a story. My illustrations are terrible. I've tried it. It's awful. It's not worth anywhere but the trash can. Hers are very good, very creative. And I happened to find her on the internet, and she happened to be local. It was an unexpected bonus to find somebody that good that quickly.
That's great. My illustrator, I've had two. One was in Indonesia. I had one locally, and then the one that really brought them to life with a lot of color, one in Indonesia. And it was amazing. She didn't speak English, I didn't speak Spanish, but we worked really well together. And again, the internet opens up our world, right?
Yes.
Okay, Janelle, we'll turn it over to you for some questions and see how we do with time.
All right,
Mm-hmm.
Carol.
I'm always interested in process, and I happen to write poetry, so I'm always interested in hearing how another author writes. And you really went into the process of how you got where you are. What's the daily practice for your writing? How do you start with an idea? How do you know? I loved the ideas that you had with the focus of each of your children's books. I love that. And did you start out with that idea, or did the book take over and tell you where you were going, as so often things do?
That's a couple of really good questions. I want to start off by saying, if you can write poetry, I have a lot of respect for you. That is a genre that I am not skilled in, and when it's done well, it's a thing of beauty. So, good for you. If you can pull that off, that's great. As far as my routine, it's a gross oversimplification to say that there are two kinds of writers. If I can roll with that for just a moment, though, there's the James Patterson model, and James Patterson is famous for doing an outline and knowing the story arc and where it's going to go and where the main characters fit in and all that sort of thing, and then he fills in the details. And then there's the Ray Bradbury school, and Ray Bradbury has said in the past that he creates a character and a scene and gives them a little push and then just follows them around and waits to see what they do. I'm very much in that camp. I am not one of those people that has a firm schedule for writing. It's been my experience that even if I'm not sitting in front of a screen working it, it's rolling around in my head somewhere. I don't worry very much about writer's block because I believe that somewhere under the surface, it's working. As far as the themes for the children's books, a couple of things I should say about that. No, number one, I don't always know where the story is going to go. Well, I never know where the story is going to go, so there's that. But they're so short that the theme usually presents itself fairly quickly. One of my stories is The Boy in His Mountain. And just as a very quick recap, a little boy pesters his parents to climb the mountain with him. They keep putting him off and putting him off because when they look out the window, they see the mountain off in the distance. He looks out the window and sees the hill in the backyard. That's his mountain. And that's what he wants to climb. And I thought the message was kids see the world differently than grownups. I thought that was the theme. And a friend of mine read it and he said, oh, I know what you're trying to say. You're trying to say, you know, pay attention to your kids because they're not going to wait on you forever. I thought, okay, that works too. So as far as your question about the theme and the message, I do what I can to set one up, and I can usually find out fairly early in the story where it's going to go. But I'm not under the delusion that I know everything that that story is going to tell somebody else. That they may pick it up and run with it in an entirely different direction, like my friend did with The Boy in the Mountain.
Deanna,
do you find that you write about the things that you have personally experienced or people you've met or incidents that you've read about? I mean, where is your inspiration coming from?
Well, another good question. This is a pretty good audience here. People that have read the Boone series usually sooner or later will come to me and ask me if it's autobiographical. And I have to assure them that it's not. Boone's pretty rough around the edges. Having said that, I write about Appalachia because this is where I'm from. I understand East Tennessee in a way that I don't understand anywhere else. And the inspiration for the Boone series came from the experiences of the young people that I worked with. Boone is not any one of those people. He's sort of a distillation or some of the folks that I worked with. And the inspiration came from the fact that somebody said once that the problem with stereotypes isn't that they're wrong, it's that they're incomplete. And I think that's true. I think that the stereotype of those kids was incomplete. There was so much more about them that could be said. There's a richness there that was just asking to be explored. As far as the kids' books, Father and Sister Radish and the Rose-Colored Glasses came from when my wife was very young. She had pet chickens, and she named two of them Father and Sister Radish. So that's where the beginning of the story came from. I made the rest of it up, but that's where that came from. And way up in a tree came from an incident in the backyard of my house with my two dogs, and I expanded on it to tell the story. So my inspiration, it almost all comes from my immediate surroundings and the people and other beings that I interact with. So Deanna, I hope that answers your question.
Next up, we have Carla.
Hello, how are you doing? And the question I have, you partially answered, but not in so many words, but maybe you didn't. When I'm listening to this and I'm thinking about the Boone series and, you know, some of the things that came from, you know, snatches of your experiences in life, some of the things, it sounds like some of the topical things that you're writing about are very sensitive things when you get into troubled boys and teens and all that. Do you ever have problems with someone who's reading your book, recognizing their own circumstances or themselves in your writing and having to be careful about, let's say, masking things or disguising things so that that this won't happen? Because I can just see where, since you're writing about some very sensitive things, that this could be an issue. So I'm just wondering if it is an issue, and if so, how do you deal with it?
One of the reasons that I don't have to worry about that, and it has not come up that somebody has approached me and said, that's me that you're writing about, isn't it? That has not happened. And I think one of the reasons that has not happened is that I was frontline in the classroom for about 30 years. So I have literally thousands of young people And I don't use any one instance as it actually happened. I take the general idea of the incident and sort of customize it to Boone's situation. He does not go through anything that is exactly what any of the children that I worked with went through. Some of it's pretty close, but some of the things that are close are things that quite a few more than one of the children that I worked with went through. There are some commonalities about the struggles that these young people have. I have had people read the Boone series and say, "This is a really good story. The language is pretty rough, isn't it?" And I've had people read the Boone series and say, "This is a really good story. You kind of cleaned up his language, didn't you?" So I figure I hit it about right if I'm getting those kind of messages from both ends of it. I try to make sure that I do not follow one of my former students around and write down what they did. I appreciate the question. It's a very important question, and I think it makes a lot of sense for all of us to be respectful of
We have Carol again.
Thank you for that, which you just answered that question, because it leads me to, you mentioned in the Boone series that you write about different characters in that or different characteristics. One of you then said that you allude to or you write about disability and and a number of other things. How do your research for those things? Because and of course you're talking to a blind or a visually impaired audience here, but that just intrigued me. How, or for any of the other topics in that series that you might hit on or be alluding to or making a story, building a story around, how do you do that? What's your research look like?
Well, I don't usually do this, but I'm going to give away something that happens in the Boone series to set this up. One of the people that shows up late in the series is a young woman named Molly. And I didn't like most of the characters in the series. I didn't even know she was going to be in the series, much less that she was going to become such a major player in the series. Well, Molly uses a wheelchair, and I do not. The thing I did for that, as far as research, is I'm a member of the Authors Guild of Tennessee, which is a fine group of people, of fellow authors. And one of the women there had written a book about disability, about the laws around disability and policy and that sort of thing. And I went to her and said, "You know, I've got this character that showed up in my book, and she uses a wheelchair. Is there somebody I can talk to? I can make sure that I'm being accurate and respectful here." And she said, "Oh yeah, you can talk to this guy." And she gave me his number. I called him, and I used him probably half a dozen times. I had numerous conversations with him. I sent him excerpts from the book and said, "Here's the situation. Did I get this right?" And he would email me back and say, "Yeah, everything's pretty good except this. You need to think about this, because that's not the way it would happen." So in the situation where I have no knowledge or experience at all, I have no problem with reaching out to people. I think that's really the only way to do it, as far as I'm concerned.
Great example. Thank you for that. As a writer, we run into obstacles in our career and in our writing process. What obstacles have you encountered and how did you overcome them? Can you think of any offhand, Jim?
I've already covered a couple of them. One that I might mention is that early on, I was young and naive and easily flattered, and all that. I got involved with a vanity press. That was a thoroughly unpleasant experience. I would not repeat that. Not all presses are alike, but the one that I had was they were very glad to take my money and very very unwilling to be of any actual help. So and that's one of the reasons I went to independent publishing, because it just did not fit me. I'm sure that there are folks out there who for whom it is a good fit. It was not a good fit for me, so I had to get past that. I've already mentioned the marketing. That's kind of an ongoing obstacle, and I would not say that I have overcome that. I have heard, and I think it's true, that in the internet age, in the age that we're in now, most markets are niche markets instead of mass markets. That's a pretty rare thing these days. And I'm sort of settling into my niche. And the people that have read the Boone series or read the children's books really seem to enjoy them, and word of mouth is starting to spread. So that obstacle is lessening in intensity, but it's still there. As a marketer, I'm really awful. I own that. I mean, that would be foolish for me to deny that.
Well, I think your strategy of starting a podcast and putting out YouTubes were right on the money. Those are good strategies as far as the marketing.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, I think so too.
I wouldn't beat yourself up too much there, Jim.
Okay, next up we have Alice.
Hello, and thank you, Mr. Hartzell, for all that you're sharing with us today. I have just a few very quick questions concerning your children's books. And I'm wondering, is each of the six children's books set in Tennessee in the mountains? And also, I'd like to know, I know you've generally told us the audience for those children's books, but can I ask you more specifically, is each of the books designed for K, kindergarten through grade three? And can you tell us about how many pages they run or how many words each of the children's books is? Thank you.
I'll be glad to. The children's books are all around 900 words, give or take. It's pretty much set up text on one page, picture on the other, to picture on the facing page to illustrate what's going on. And they end up being about 25, 26, 28 pages, something like that. I would say third, by the time you get to third grade, you're probably a little old for these books. I would say they're very good for children who can't read to sit in their grown-up's lap and listen to the story and look at the pictures. And they're very good for beginning readers. But, and I've, you know, middle school and late elementary school is a genre I've tried. And I just haven't cracked the code on that yet. I'm just not there. As far as the setting, it's a pretty generic setting. None of them are specific to Tennessee. I mean, the boy in his mountain, the mountains look like the Smokies because, you know, Alex and I are both from this area, and it just made sense to do that. But, and one of the things that I find so amazing about Alex is that I didn't give her any specific instructions about that sort of thing. Some of the children look like they came maybe from the Indian subcontinent. Some of them may have African-American roots. Some of them are clearly Caucasian. She does a really good mix of that. I didn't tell her to do that. That diversity is squarely in her lap. The only thing I did was, you know, some of the books have a little girl as the main character and some of them have a little boy as the main character. So I didn't want to lean too heavy one or the other. But as far as the location, no, they are not all specific to East Tennessee.
Carla, go ahead.
No, I'm a repeater. I'm going to make this quick, but I'm fascinated with this. You said that some of your main characters are little girls. And sometimes when I try to write some about somebody of an opposite gender, I have to be careful about being authentic and all that stuff. Did you find it challenging to write from a viewpoint of somebody with an opposite opposite gender, or the fact that it was a children's book and everything was simple, that it was a non-issue?
As far as the simplicity, I read something years ago that really stuck with me, and I don't remember who said it. I wish I could give credit to who said it, but the person was talking about writing for children and said, do not write down to them. Make sure that the language is language they can understand, and slip in a tough word every now and then just to kind of stretch their head a little bit. But don't write down to them. They're more perceptive than we give them credit for. When my wife and I were both in the workforce, I worked with teenagers and she worked with little kids, and she was a social worker, and she would come home after working with teenagers and just flail about the house saying, "Oh, they're so sarcastic." And I would say, "Yeah, that's what they're like." And that's how I feel about little kids. They wear me out just to think about them. So it's tough for me to do that. And I have to have, and one of the things I should say, especially for folks who are in this independently, find some people to look over your shoulder. Find a good first reader, a good beta reader, somebody to check your work. That's very important. My wife is my first reader, and she is excellent at it. Because when I read my own work, I tend to read the stuff that I should have said instead of what I did say. So there's that. I have to have somebody take a look at that. It also helps me to have Alex is a young woman, and it helps as us working the children's stories together. And they're the ones who have a young girl as the main character could pretty easily, just as easily, have a young boy. I didn't dive into issues that were gender specific. It's more general stuff. I tried to dodge that particular problem.
Musi, go ahead.
This is a silly question, but I wondered, did you start out on a typewriter and then move to computer? And as a child, did you write stories to yourself?
Yes, to all of that. I actually, when I was a little kid, I would write longhand. It was, just as a side note, I think they gave up by my sophomore year in high school trying to improve my handwriting. I'm very left-handed, and I think faster than I write, so it's not particularly pretty. I definitely started out writing on a typewriter. By the time I got to being serious about writing, it was on a computer. I like that a lot. I mean, I have been at the end of a typewritten page and made a mistake and stared at all that type that I've done and thought, oh boy, it's either white out or start over. Computers are easier. But I have used all of those, all kinds of media for writing.
Jim, this is Kathy. I wanted to know, what do you enjoy about being a writer? Why do you stick with it?
One of the reasons I stick with it is, and I go back to the first NaNoWriMo, the National Novel Writing Month competition I did, which I would recommend to anyone who thinks they might want to write. It's a good one. And I think I mentioned that the point of it is just tell the story. Don't worry about getting everything just right. Just tell the story and go back and fix it. And when I finished the first try at that, when I finished pushing back, I went back to it and I read it. And on some of them, I thought, well, you know, that's not bad. Some of it was trash. Some of it, you know, just erase it and move on. But I thought, you know, that works. And I really like that. I like being able to do that. And of course, if somebody comes up and says that they love my work, that's a real ego boost for me. I've had a number of people be kind of angry with me that when they got to the sixth book in the Boone series and it said at the end, this ends book six and ends the series, they were kind of ticked off about that. Which I took as a compliment. It meant, you know, Boone got into their heads. And, I'm good with that. Everything ends sometime, so I had to close it off. But there's a lot of reasons that I enjoy writing. But if it's done well, it's a thing of beauty. It really is.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you, Jim, for everything you've shared with us. This has been wonderful. Thank you, Kathy, for suggesting to bring Jim on. This is great.
Thank you to everybody, to you all, and to the people that tuned in. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah. And tell us again, first your website and then your podcast, if you would, please.
I'll be glad to. My website is housemountainviews.com, HousemountainViews, like House Mountain Views, but no spaces. No capital letters. That's .com. And it's got links to purchase my books and a list of shows and signings and, you know, where I'm going to be in the in the upcoming year. My podcast is housemountainviews.podbean.com.
And Jim, will you spell your last name for the audience?
I will. It's HARTSELL.
Okay.
And I should say also, if anybody wants to communicate with me, which I welcome, my email is jim@housemountainviews.com.
Thank you so much, Jim. This has just been great. And your books, the people can find out where to get your books on your website. So,
Cheryl, do you have a prompt for next week?
I do.
Okay.
I do. Okay. The prompt next time is going to be green, rainbows, and magic. Genre of your choice. I know you all know why I'm picking those. So have fun, and can't wait to see what you guys write. And thank you again. Thank you, thank you, thank you, thank you, Kathy. And go let you close out, Kath. Thanks.
Thank you, everyone, for being with us for today and making this a fabulous episode. And a super big thank you to Jim Hartzell, who has been a wonderful, wonderful guest for us. What great luck finding Jim at a show here in Knoxville. Please visit his website at housemountainviews.com. Join us next time. It'll be March 1st, our next Zoom call. Be sure to visit writingworkswonders.com for these show notes, previous episodes, and more opportunities to participate in Writing Works Wonders events, scores of resources, as well as writing prompts available there. Above all else, we want you to be encouraged, inspired, and enjoy the wonders of writing. We look forward to seeing you next time.
Thank you for joining us today on Writing Works Wonders. Kathy and I are thrilled to spend time with you. A tap on that button that says subscribe so you will not miss our show. You can also tap on the link for writingworkswonders.com. It'll take you directly to all the show notes and information that we shared today. Then you can sign up to receive the Zoom link so that you can be live with us when we are recording. You can also contact us at info@writingworkswonders.com. Our phone number is 347-467-0221. We also have a donate button. All donations go to technical expenses that Kathy and I incur in order to keep this podcast going. Kathy and I want you to feel encouraged and inspired and know the wonder in writing. And until next time, our friends, keep on writing.
Opinions expressed on ACB Media are those of the respective program contributors and do not necessarily reflect the views held by the American Council of the Blind, its elected officials, or its staff.